Hello, everyone, and welcome back to a brand new social distancing friendly episode of the Financial Confessions. As you guys probably noticed, we've been away for a little bit, and that's because we wanted to kind of recalibrate how we do stuff here at TFC so we could continue to talk to the guests and experts who can talk about all different elements of what's going on right now and our money lives in general. But as you guys probably recall, our typical set is very much not social distancing friendly, so we had to rework a few things, but we are back and ready to go. I'm actually at my desk here at the TFD office, and our first guest back is a special one because he's someone you guys are definitely familiar with at this point, and someone who I'm so, so glad to be in the same room with, even if we are on opposite ends of the room. And that is our producer, Ryan. But before we talk to Ryan, I want to give a very quick hello to our beloved partners with whom we make every episode of the Financial Confessions. If you have not heard of Intuit by now, especially with everything that's been going on, you've probably heard of some of their awesome products. Intuit makes all of the tools that you need to get your finances in order and manage your financial life no matter what might be going on. Some of these tools you've probably already used, things like TurboTax, QuickBooks, Mint, Turbo, etc. And for us here at TFD and in my personal life, I've actually been using some of these tools more than ever to make sure we're on top of everything. We actually recently got approved for our PPP loan here at TFD, and QuickBooks was vital in getting us all of the documents that we needed to prepare easily and quickly in order to apply for the loan. And yay, we got it. Also, in my personal life, I've been checking Mint more obsessively than even I usually do, because with all the upheaval going on in my life right now and my husband in another country for the foreseeable future, keeping a very close watch on everything that's happening in our day-to-day financial lives is super important to us. I'll talk later about more of Intuit's awesome products and how they can fit into your life right now. But in the meantime, if you cannot wait to get started, check out Intuit's products at the link in our description or our show notes. So as promised, we have today with us in studio, quote unquote, Ryan!
Hello!
Oh my God.
I'm so happy to be here.
Oh my God. It's May 7th as we film this, but it could be April 13th. It could be March 29th. It could be... What year is it?
I don't know. Seeing a friendly face right now is going to be like my main memory going forward in reference. So everything will be like 3 weeks from when I saw Chelsea.
I know. I feel like I'm... How long has it been that we've been in CORE here in NYC?
I don't know. And I know that I CORE'd like 8 days before the general pop. So I know that my is a little bit more.
Your counter.
Yeah. So I got to think it's, what is it? We're definitely around 60 days, 70 days.
Jesus.
It's, I know that on the 100th day of CORE, like Twitter is going to like make that a national holiday. And I'm just dreading it.
I'm also like, it's funny because I was like, I was on a tour in Canada when all of this was really kicking off.
I remember.
And it was funny because the day that I had arrived maybe the day before in Vancouver was the last leg of the tour. And it was becoming increasingly unclear every city if we were even going to continue the tour because things were getting dire. And like the first or second day that I was in Vancouver, I got bad news about work stuff. I got news that my husband had to leave the country in 3 days. I had obviously the just mounting horror of everything that was happening with the shutdown in New York and all the news. And I literally spent the last day and a half in Vancouver in my hotel room crying. Just like, and Lauren was with me, my co-founder Lauren, who a lot of you probably know, and poor Lauren, who's like, I mean, she is just truly the most bubbly, happy, positive, effervescent person. And she's so sweet. Like, I was crying. So she was not even really that sad, but she was like sympathy crying. And it was just like the darkest, darkest. Like, Vancouver seems very nice, you guys. I really enjoyed it, but it is forever just a dark, dark place in my mind.
See, when you're describing that to me, it's like, I can't wait for someone to make like a really funny, sharp, 6-episode British comedy about like quarantine or whatever. What I'm dreading is the independent films that are going to come out of this, like set during the quarantine just open weeping while like Snow Patrol plays or something. It's going to be rough.
Well, we wanted to come together today to talk. I thought the first episode back post-hiatus for TFC, like, we have guests coming up who are going to talk about all the more serious stuff, how to deal with your money in this time, investments, organizing, all the kind of, like, day-to-day stuff. But I wanted to start back with a more, I think, fun topic, which is, like, how people have been sort of losing their minds on social media, and especially when it comes to, like, influencers, celebrities, brands. Like, things are chaotic in the core. And I feel like money and status and wealth and displays of wealth and how all of that plays out on the internet is more pointed than ever and more sort of campy and unintentionally hilarious than ever.
Yeah, I think the thing about all of this is that, like, we've never needed wellness checks more when we can't do them. But also, like, because the stuff I'm seeing is very worrying, but also, like, all the rules are suddenly rewritten. Like, the people who have had every advantage and display that wealth and display their, like, healthy, beautiful lives and concoct this, like, it's like a construction for themselves and for the public. And, you know, for some people it's a job, for some people it's just like something that they feel the need to do. But that kind of falls apart because, I mean, number one, we all know what you're doing, which is you're on your couch eating chips, tweeting just like the rest of us.
Right.
And like binging Netflix. It's not that glamorous. And also, like, it's much easier to jump right to resentment and rage at people who have like so much and are still acting miserable.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I mean, the gall of Ellen to
Ellen. I knew she was going to be the first one.
That is still, she's like, I'm in prison. It's like, are you?
Are you in prison, Ellen?
Are you in prison with your beautiful wife and your, like, dozens of acres with, like, your army of pets and assistants and people dropping off, like, Blue Apron for you? That must be horrible.
This is, like, pre-quar, but I imagine has continued post-quar and has got to be even further ramped up in its chaos. It's, like, my favorite celebrity anecdote of, like, them making some assistant do an unhinged thing. So Barbara Streisand apparently has this favorite ice cream. I forget what the name brand is, but it's, like, this from this ice creamery in, like, Santa Monica or Malibu or something. And she always wants every day a pint of this strawberry ice cream, but she will never keep more than that pint because if she has more than the pint, she will eat more than the pint. So once a day, every day, an assistant has to drive out to this ice creamery and get her freshly packed pint of the strawberry ice cream and bring it to her so she can eat it that day.
Nobody's living larger than Barbara Streisand right now because while that is probably so rough for her, she is also the person who built a mall in her basement because she and filled it with things that she already shopped for so she could pretend to shop like a normal person, and she pays people to work in that mall.
I remember reading that. You know, what is the thing that you would do if you had the endless money and resources and adoration of a Barbara Streisand?
I think, you know, I would like to think I'd be like, I would help the children and blah, blah, blah. But I know that there would be a couple weird things that I would do. I would definitely have an enormous trampoline in my backyard. Just because a
trampoline.
I feel like what a better way to clear your mind to just go out to your trampoline
and
that's
bounce.
The side of your yard, size of your yard, and just bounce. I also feel like, yeah, I feel like I would do some fantastical stuff like that that would be super weird but fun for me. Like, I would definitely have a faucet in my home that, like, hot cocoa came out of, and it would be someone's job to, like, maintain the hot cocoa faucet
so I could
live like Mrs. Claus.
Oh, my God. What? I don't know what I would. I would definitely, we live in New York, so we've long since given up the idea of closet space, but
yeah.
I dream of like a big walk-in closet.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if I was to think like really realistically.
That's not even a rich person thing. Like anyone who lives in any city that's not, or any place that's not New York can have a walk-in closet.
Yeah. Sure. Our idea of luxury is a little different than most other people, but I think if I was to be like really serious about like what would I actually really spend that amount of money on in my home? This is similar to my trampoline. I've always dreamed of a room that's just a big bed. Like, from wall to wall, the whole room is a bed. And you can just go in there and just be, like, mentally ill. Like, I can just go in there and have depression, and no one can bother me. And then I close that and it's sealed off and someone changes all the sheets and it cleans it all up. And I go in there whenever I'm sad and it smells like lavender. That would be such a nice, like genie's bottle.
You're describing like a padded room, basically.
Yeah, that's what I want. I want the rich person version of a padded cell.
It's so funny because I think in some ways, because I see people who are, you know, quarantining in these expansive, you know, homes with gardens and pools and all of these things. And we're obviously in small New York City apartments. But weirdly, I think psychologically there is an element of being in a small confined space that, like, I feel that my world has shrunk down to that space and I maybe even want less because of it. Like, I'm honestly even stressed out to be doing a thing now. Do you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Because I'm so used to, like, I'm like a little hamster in a box now and yeah. Everything else is like stressful.
So I think it's actually been particularly hard for me because I was depressed for a lot of my 20s and my depression symptoms took the shape of basically quarantine, which is like avoiding people, staying home, like not spending money, cleaning. And so I finally sort of got out of that and got to a really good place with my life. And I felt like I mean, intimately that I was working really hard on balance and trying to create, like, curate a life for myself that I felt was really sustainable and flourishing and focused. And the minute I felt like I was starting to really pull it together, this all started. So it's definitely tough, but it's also like, I think, yeah, my world has gotten smaller, but in some ways I feel like it has also really clarified a lot for me and definitely for my husband of what was of no value that we were doing and what was of huge value that we were doing, the stuff that, like, you know, I have to get back to or find a way to start doing again because it's really affected me in ways that I wasn't totally sure the effects of. For example, like cooking at home a lot more rather than eating out or just like doing quick cooking things, you know what I mean? Where you're like frozen vegetables, done. Stuff like picking out ingredients at the store kind of thoughtfully for the week ahead and then cooking and stuff. Everyone's always talked to me about that, and I'm always like, yeah, okay, I'm not doing that. But it actually has gave me a really good connection with, like, what I'm putting in my body, how it makes me feel, the communal feeling of working with my husband on a task like that, and then also giving each other food and being like, do you like it? Like, I made it the way you like it. Like, that experience, I don't want to let go of when this is over. So I feel like, you know, I'm not saying I'm happy any of this happened at all, but I do think you can take something away from it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's true. I think there's definitely, like I was saying, I think living in a small space has kind of in some ways worked to my advantage because by keeping my world small, I think that helps me focus on just like, it gives me a lot of anxiety to think any distance in the future, as I'm sure it does for most of us. But I think the focus on what makes today a good day? Can I have a good day today on today's terms? And then I'll work on tomorrow as it comes. I think that is a healthier approach that I personally was someone who was always living in a projected future. And I was always very, very focused on what's next, what's on the calendar, where are we going this summer? What's next for TFD? What are we making? What are we doing? Who are we hiring? And in my personal life as well. And I think that ultimately it didn't make me unhappy, but I think it robbed me sometimes of the ability to be present in things that were happening. And now I have no choice to do anything but be present 24/7, 365, which I do think has its upsides.
Yeah, I think it's clarified for me, but definitely for my husband, that the point of everything you're doing should be to be happy and healthy. And if that's not like your goal, if like being happy isn't your goal, like what are you doing all of this for?
Fulfilled.
Yeah, fulfilled. And if you can't sit in a moment and just like, there are times now that we're like sit in silence and both read a book and just occasionally be like, hey, I'm gonna get tea. And like that moment is so nice and quiet. And before I probably would have thought like, I need to be doing work. I need to be getting stuff done. I have to get the laundry done because I have to be in the office tomorrow and I'm running out of like dress pants. And like all of that stuff that like that I was doing to feel productive so that I could fake the fulfilled feeling, it's already there. Like you can access that fulfilled feeling whenever you want if you're like mindful and you realize that like I'm here with someone I love. We're both healthy. We both have enough. And like I get to just sit and read this book. Like there's horrors happening outside my door. And the most responsible thing I can do is sit here and read this book quietly. And like, so I'm going to enjoy it. And I don't want to lose that. And so that's why I think like when I see people on social media, like the people who are doing it right, huge shout out to Florence Pugh, having a great year.
What is she doing?
She is cooking in this giant kitchen in like complete athleisure, no bra, hair up in like a messy pony. She's just like cooking and making a mess and laughing and like not even performatively. Like she's not like, and then we're going to fry up these shallots. She's literally like, we don't have any olive oil, so I'm using canola. If you've got olive oil, definitely use olive oil. Stuff like that where you're like, it's not even to the, it's relatable content. It's that it's like human and quiet and slower and like imperfect. And like, that's what I need to see right now. I don't need to see people being like, you know, me and my perfect children going for a walk around the yard. Make sure you get in your 10,000 steps.
Which brings us to the topic at hand. Influencers and celebs.
Yeah.
In core.
Influencers right now.
I just feel, okay, so influencers first and foremost. So my Explore page has been an education because I've mentioned this before, but I don't follow any influencers under the age of like 55, 65. And all of those influencers, they're taking this shit real seriously for obvious reasons. They're like very much sort of about the protocol. Like I follow this one influencer, I think she's like maybe 57 or something, and she's been like showing off all these like matching bikini mask sets that she's like made for herself. Stunning. Out of different fabrics. Like, love that. But I on my Explore feature, I've been looking around at like the traditional influencers who are like still very much what feels like that 2011, 2012, like the, you know, the perfect bouquet of peonies, everything's white. There's like stuff precariously placed on like a tray on a bed, photographing while you're watching something on your laptop, like that kind of influencer, and they are losing their minds.
Yeah.
They're absolutely losing their minds.
I think partially the illusion of what they were building for so many years is just shattered. Like, we know you're not traveling. We know that, like, in order to achieve that, you're running around your house like a crazy person all morning before the light runs out so you can get one shot where you pretend to eat a scone. Like, we all realize that's what's happening now. Like, we can't pretend that, like, oh, someone must have helped her, or like, you know, she must be at a beautiful hotel or whatever. Like, we now know that you're not. You're like in your stinky bedroom with the wash piling up. We know that, and it's hidden behind the camera. So it's kind of over. And also this whole minimalist, super clean, just like everything is stunningly placed, like beautifully. Yeah. It's unsustainable in this environment. So to pretend that you are doing it, like it looks increasingly desperate and weird that you would try to keep this up. And so especially if you have a personal tragedy, if someone watching this right now knows someone who's sick or has passed away or is at risk or is a frontline worker or an essential quote unquote worker, which I like hate that term. I think like those people are obviously essential, but also like those are the people that we're putting at risk. So there should be some like acknowledgement of that in the term. If you know those people, I mean, it's gotta be infuriating to know that some influencer got paid, you know, $5,000 to plug a mask brand and spent their morning like fixing their hair and like definitely had someone come over and help, but then like didn't tell you.
I scrolled through this Instagram of an influencer. She's like German, but she lives in London and she's very, very popular. And I think there's something about, because so many influencers, their fundamental kind of value proposition is aspiration, conspicuous consumption. It's, you know, the material goods, consumerism. Like, it's all of these things that kind of hinge on a fundamental sort of quasi-promise, because they're not quite a celebrity. They're not quite a magazine. They're not a publication. They're supposedly a person, and they're supposedly letting you into their life, but with this incredible degree of aspiration and this incredible degree of materialism, but always with that sort of quasi-promise that this could be you, that there are parts of it that you could emulate, that you're looking at a real person's food, not something, you know, that was designed by a team of stylists, even though in many cases it is. And I think now, when the value proposition of like, you could do this, you could have this, is still like, no, I could not, nor do I want to at this time, nor do I want to have, you know, head-to-toe designer wear while showing off your like acai bowl that you made yourself that morning. What is left of them? What do they have left to offer? And I think for a lot of them, sort of like faux quirky, faux funny, captions that they put on these like obviously hyper curated photos, that's all they have left now is the attempt to sort of be relatable now that the aspiration element is sort of really hampered. And I think you're seeing now that so much of it is just so thin and so, and they don't got a whole lot of jokes. They don't got a whole lot of stuff to say outside of it. And there's something about it when you look at it now that feels almost like dystopian in a way. Like it feels so strained and like, haha, like I saw this one like boomerang from this girl, or like I guess it was like a video where she and her husband went through 10 outfit changes to do this like sort of quirky like real life versus quarantine. And I'm just like, there something about that now just feels like I almost feel bad for them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it's now clear that it's now more clear than ever that what made celebrity fascinating, stuff like plastic surgery, where you're like, I couldn't get that, but like, oh my God, like look at Kim Kardashian, like, oh my God. But now it's like, if she was to go get medical treatments, she'd be wasting a doctor's time.
Yeah.
And like, stuff like, you know, I'm a model. Are you in your home? What are you modeling? Like, you're going to model things that were delivered to you by a postal worker that has to go out and like, brave this, the worst thing happening in the world right now, in order to deliver you some clothes that you can like put on and then send back and waste their time. Like that's gone. If you're an athlete, if you can't play the game and you don't have the lighting and the screaming fans and the endorsement deals and all this stuff, you're just a guy in your home who's like good at basketball or whatever.
Right.
And that's great. But it does put back into reference that like some of these people, like some of these huge celebrities, without the pomp and circumstance, without when they walk in the room, they're the most important person, without the assistants, without the lighting, without the interviewers, without the team of stylists, like they're just us. And so like you could apply all of that stuff to any of us and we would be able to pull it off. That's the whole conceit of celebrity, is that like the before and after and the like magical journey. But the journey is really just consumerism and capitalism. And all of the way that we've rebuilt celebrity recently, we recently rebuilt celebrity to be about like internet points, likes, followers. We rebuilt it from the ground up to you are constantly on display. You are your own PR person. Everything you say is recorded by the internet. You have to live a perfect life and be an example. And you have to be perfectly woke and you have to be beautiful. All of that we thought was inevitable because of the march of the information technology, the march of society's demands, the march of the way we've changed feminism. All of that stuff felt so inevitable, and now we realize it's paper thin. It's paper thin. Something like Facebook right now feels so powerful because they're just collecting all this information of people sitting at their homes. But it's a good note to realize that, like, you know, it's one break in that chain and it all goes down. And so like stuff like people who were cleaning it up on Instagram, being a travel influencer, like that's over. The gay fitness influencers who are like two husbands who just like duel with their abs or whatever they do. That's like, what are you going to do? You're going to videotape each other doing sit-ups in your apartment?
There was that photo that went viral of like the Christopher Street Park where so many of the people in the photo were like shirtless, like beautiful, sculpted within an inch of their life men in Speedos in this public park. And the energy of like, I fucking worked on this body and I don't care if I have to wear a surgical mask and a Speedo and stand in this park in the middle of New York City, someone is going to see it.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's what we all have to come to terms with, is that like, A, nobody cares. No one's going to probably see you. And it's what's going to matter also, is how you feel.
To flaunt a healthy body right now, to flaunt how like vibrant and like my lungs are just taking in so much air. Like, how dare you? Honestly, how dare you?
And you know, what's funny too, is that feeling like you were saying about the travel influencers, someone on Twitter was like, passport as identity Twitter is screwed.
Yeah.
And it's true. And the thing is that I feel like that feeling of, what were we really saying when we were, you know, showing off every place that we could go? You're not really saying much other than I can afford a plane ticket, I can afford a hotel, I can afford to do these things. And now travel is going to be something where you damn well better want to go there.
And you better have a good reason. You better be going to see somebody. You better be going to experience something. And like that, I think, is the clarifying thing. I think I've been talking around it a little bit because it's hard to come to grips with it while we're in it. But I think the big clarification for me is that, like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that you went to a hotel that, like, is a nice background for a photo. It doesn't matter that, like, a brand designed within an inch of its life a coat and gave it to you and then you got to take a picture with it. It doesn't matter that, like, you went to a stylist who gave you a cutting edge hairdo that's super hard to pull off and maintain and you're managing to keep it up. Like, that is so meaningless. What means anything to me right now would be seeing my mom. You know what means a lot to me right now is that, like, the times I find to be happy within myself. And it's so weird because I thought I knew what that stuff meant. I think we all kind of thought we knew what that stuff meant. And a lot of us thought that it meant, you know, I've got a very centered Instagram page. And we're learning that, like, no, it's about, I didn't even pick up Instagram today. Like, I've been writing letters with my grandma who's, like, trapped in a nursing home states away. And, like, that, it's so, it sounds so sappy and over the top. Like, that has been so rewarding because I'm like, I would have never gotten this time back.
I definitely, you know, I still use Instagram. I still use Twitter, all those things. And I'm alone now. So, you know, I don't have anyone in the house most of the time. So I do find that the connectivity element of it, I enjoy more than ever. I love seeing my friends on it more than ever. But I do think that there's that hollowness of, I think we're seeing now, I think the difference, because some things that are experiential are still wonderful. Like when someone posts, you know, their little sourdough bowl that they like spent all day making and they're like so proud of, that feels better than ever to me to look at. I get to see a friend. I feel like we're sharing something through social media and I get to share in their joy in that thing that they did. But the stuff that was always about the way it looks and not about how it feels seems more, is worse and more irritating and more grating than it's ever been. That stuff. Like when you see a photo curated within an inch of its life of breakfast, like I feel exhausted. I feel like tired looking at it, you know? And I wonder, it's hard not to wonder like how much of that might continue in the time when we are eventually going places again and traveling again and seeing people again. And I personally hope that a lot of that continues because I think there was such, we were at a time where there was a super high tolerance for artifice and a super high tolerance for like,
there was a worship of artifice.
There was a worship of it. It was more when you went to brunch, it was more about the picture you took at brunch than how much you enjoyed the brunch or how, what a good time you had with your friends at the table.
I think it also is very revealing of people's motives, even people you have parasocial relationships with. So like when I see makeup influencers that are still getting together to do collabs, like, oh, I see, this wasn't, I wanted to see my friend and like we had an idea for a video. This was clearly you wanted to like keep the streams up and like make sure you got those likes. Or if I'm seeing, you know, people who have always been really conspicuous in their good deeds, continuing to do conspicuous good deeds, even though good deeds right now are inherently shouldn't be conspicuous. And then you see people like, there are celebrities that I think are doing a great job. I mean, like, she's have clearly going through something, but like Britney Spears was just sending people money over DM who were like, my kids need diapers. She was like, how much is that? And then just Venmoing or PayPaling them. And like to also see people that, she also seems like someone who's like happy enough in her home, like bopping around. And to see people,
their super hot piece boyfriend.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Good for her.
I saw him running with like a mask on or whatever.
In New York?
No, in LA, like right when it started. And I was just like, oh bud, you gotta go home. You gotta go home to your hot pop star girlfriend. It's, you know, I think it's been super revealing what people like value. And, you know, and I mean, not to talk about her again, but like, but when celebrities have jumped onto the Ellen show, the like kind of weird stunts people are pulling because this isn't about them for a moment. Like the weird, like, I'm gonna go viral for this. Like the minute quarantine started, Kim Kardashian was like, hey, guess what, Taylor Swift? It was like, this is not about you.
Like, there, someone on Twitter was like, it's so funny in retrospect knowing that those celebs got together to do that Imagine video like 2 days into quarantine.
Yeah. Oh, they had to stay home from like Sweetgreen for like an hour. And they were like,
like, imagine. The best part about the Stanley Tucci making a Negroni video, which, thank you for making that. The best part of it was he seemed kind of bored. He was like just making the drink. It wasn't over the top. Like he was clearly making it for himself and his wife. Like And there's that feeling of like, and that's why Ina Garten to me is just such a queen, because she's not like us, and she's frankly not really trying to be like us. Like, yeah. She's in her massive, expansive Hamptons home, like, showing us pictures of, like, the peonies that she picked from her garden to put next to, like, the chicken salad she made for Joffrey. And there's not, to me, it's, like, the aspiration, like you said earlier, it's never pretending to be anything it's not. And I think that forced relatability and that forced quirkiness, I think, is hopefully going by the wayside.
I think also, big media companies right now don't know how to do this. Authenticity is very hard to pull off because there's only one of it, and like, you either access it or you don't, and it's very transparent when you're not being authentic. And I think a lot of these companies now are trying to put together, like, I think Amy Schumer's doing a cooking show, which to me is just like, okay, the exact opposite of the Florence Pugh cooking on Instagram Live thing, because it's like, it's going to be lots of, like, bits and jokes, I'm assuming, and lots of, like, recipes she found on the internet that were changed a little bit. And it's like, the stuff that was working before, I think we were, yeah, you're right, we were already trending towards it, because, like, gourmet makes work so great because Claire isn't perky and happy and pretending to
I
be all the time.
I love Claire.
She's just like, I don't want to do that.
I
and
know.
And that is, like, a real feeling.
And it's a feeling that I think that we all have now more than ever, and I think that there's I think a lot of these trends were probably going to happen over the long term because of climate reasons. Like, I think every person who is coming of age now is more and more a part of a generation that is like, whoa, taking your, like, showing off pictures of your private jet collection, you know, Kendall Jenner or whatever, like, that's just gauche. Like, that's not even aspirational. It's just like you ruining the planet for your own pleasures. So I do think that really over the top stuff was going to start to trend away. And I feel like that is maybe going to be accelerated now because it's so many people are in such precarious positions that it feels kind of gross to be watching people, you know, be so over the top with things. But I think that there's hopefully a move toward a version of relatability that is, I think there was that weird sort of quasi moment, especially on Instagram, where it was like Instagram versus real life. And it would be sort of the equivalent of, like, I don't know, and a good example would be like a model, like, flexing all of her muscles and showing her perfect body versus, like, leaning over and having, like, an inch of a stomach pooch. And yeah, it was supposed to be this big reveal. And I think now, like you said, Florence Pugh, braless, messy bun, no makeup, messing up her food, that is actual relatability. That is actual authenticity. And I hope that that's a continuing trend.
Honestly, people at work have joked with me that I'm crazy about this. I think, like, the social media of the future is things like Zoom, where it's like, yeah, it exists for a second. You don't feel the need to make it perfect because it only exists for a second. You try to be presentable. You put on a shirt. You're like, oh, I have sauce on my face. But you, because you want to be like a human being, but you're not, nobody on Zoom is like, well, I've got the sunset and, you know, let's get it in within the hour. And, you know, my hairstylist is here. You're just like doing a call, and it exists in the moment it exists, and you get to be with somebody and you get to really interact, and then it goes away. And I think, you know, like, I know a lot of performers, drag performers, comedians. I myself am putting together a comedy benefit thing that will be happening on Zoom. The things that I've participated in and the things that that I've felt during it are really intimate, and it feels like you're seeing a show that is like in a small cafe or like a small venue, and you're just with some people, and it's going to be weird and silly and in the moment.
And anything can happen.
Anything can happen. And then it's over. And it gets to be over. And you don't have to create a million memes out of it. And you don't have to share it. And you don't have to, like, wait for everyone to watch it on Netflix. It's just a thing you saw. And that's okay.
Yeah.
And I think Zoom is weirdly the place that we've all ended up having those experiences, and they feel so valuable. And not to say I don't binge watch things on Netflix still, not to say I don't download AAA video games and, like, you know, get to a certain point and then, like, text a friend, did you get to this thing? We don't want to spoil it for you. Those things have value, but we were way overdoing them. We were way overdoing the, like, you know, YouTube, like, the YouTube stunt thing where it's like, I'm gonna pull off this giant moment and it's got a trend, and now this video you have to watch it 8 times and share it. And we can drop that and we can say, like, hey, like, I'm just gonna listen to this conversation that's, like, on a podcast, and, like, that's cool, and, like, it doesn't have to be perfect, and I'm spending time with people that I want to hear from, and that's to me has so much more value. Like the idea of like, I think we were also asking people for perfection for a long time. And now like Instagram Live is kind of the opposite of perfection. Like it's two people being like, I don't know how to work it. You know what I mean? And like dropping their phones and saying something and being like, oh, I'm supposed to say that. And like that kind of like fun stuff is like what life is. Life isn't rehearsed and well lit and like, and you know, perfectly executed and politically expedient and heavily researched. Life isn't always like that. You should try to do those things when you can, but like sometimes you make a mistake and like it, we're now living in a time when we have to be forgiving of people's mistakes because like everything's so precarious.
I also, God, no industry for me I'm like less bullish on long-term than freaking like luxury and designer fashion because yeah. Like that, I mean, experiences will always be experiences, but who is out here trying to have like a Margiela belt after all this?
Last like, year, I remember hearing people being like, athleisure is dead, streetwear is dead, this is all over. And now it's like, things you order online and are comfy to wear? Doesn't seem like that trend's gonna end anytime
no,
soon.
No, like I'm like, we'll be lucky if we're not all like naked after this because it's just too much of an effort. And I feel like, I wonder often now, what does aspiration look like after this? Because clearly what we know about Miss Rona now is that this is going to be it for a while. Like, we may find a better equilibrium. We may get like a cocktail of antivirals that allows people to live a much more normal life. You know, I'm sure people will go back to restaurants. Things will start to open back up here and there. But there is no way that this reset is not going to have cultural reverberations for the next decade at minimum, if not longer. And what does aspiration look like in a world where A, so many people have become economically unsettled, B, there is so much precarity around what the next 6 months will look like, and C, so many of those biggest locuses of aspiration are not available to us. What does it look like?
I mean, if you look at something like 9/11, which just, until now was the defining event of my life. Everything in my life was pre and post 9/11. Media that I watched was completely defined by the standards set by
security of so many life experiences.
I mean, family stuff. I mean, everything. I mean, just the way it was the end of my childhood, really. It was the end of a lot of us, of our childhoods. I mean, whether it happened to you at 19 or happened to you at 8. There was a moment where you were like, 3,000 people are dead. My parents are crying. School's canceled. Like that leaves a mark. And it was also a media event. And then, so it was shaped by CNN and it was shaped by MSNBC. It was shaped by Fox News. It was shaped by statements the president made. This is a social media event and nobody's driving the ship. And like Facebook has algorithms and stuff that are super influential, but they're not in full control of what's happening. And so there isn't a clear story being told here. Everybody's getting their own individual story in their home with their friends. And
there's no enemy. There's no common focus.
Yeah, we can't unite against this because it's not something we can see or feel. And so I think what we're hurtling towards is a reality where the most aspirational thing you can be is happy and like self-fulfilled and
well-adjusted
and intelligent and I think health is, weirdly enough, health has always sort of been aspirational, but now actual health is aspirational. Not the appearance of health, not the like performance of look how the athletic feats I can accomplish.
The wellness culture stuff.
I'm on a ton of steroids, look at my abs, I'm shredded. The actual like I am mentally and physically well. For all our talk about self-care and wellness, which I don't know was very productive for the last few years, actually doing self-care, actually having wellness and not like constantly obsessing about it and talking about it and performing it is now aspirational. When I talk to someone who sounds like they're in a really good place and I'm like, what have you been up to? And they're like, you know, I've been meditating a lot. Whenever I talk to them or whenever they tweet, it's like a couple times a day and it's really thoughtful and funny or it's really well informed or it's a real reflection. It has actual value for me. It's not just like weird shit posting of like the latest meme about it's National Cookie Day and like, I have a pile of cookies. Like, that stuff isn't aspirational anymore. Going viral to me is not aspirational anymore. What's aspirational is when I read a post from someone or I see a video of someone and it seems like thoughtful and it seems like they took a second and they have something to actually help me and that I can take away and use. And that kind of stuff has always, we always knew it was supposed to be important, but now it suddenly is actually important. And like actually being able to feel like other people have something to offer me beyond eye candy is like, you know, I think it's kind of revolutionary for our generation who was raised on like a constantly raising bar of eye candy, a constantly raising bar of like novelty and shallowness and memes and like all the ephemera. And the ephemera kind of falls away. And as much as we're always going to have memes and in jokes, it's different now because generally, like, I feel like the memes have, like, meant something. Or they have some kind of, like, hyper-specificity that makes them really intelligent and sharp. And, you know, for example, I have family members who are now suddenly very much into politics. And the, like, psychology and sociology of politics that weren't before. And it's because they feel the threat and like the need to take care of it, but also they feel like they're accomplishing something when they actually get informed on an issue and not just read a Facebook post about an anti-vaxxer. When my mom like reads a New York Times article and learns something, she like calls me and she's like, "Did you know this?" And I'm like, "That is so cool that like at least that we're demonstrating the value of these like important things."
So there is a lot of artifice out there, and we're realizing a lot of stuff that just isn't all that necessary. But one thing that has been more necessary to me than ever in this time is keeping a close eye on my own personal finances. My husband and I have had our lives kind of upturned with him having to leave the country, and obviously that incurs many expenses that we did not expect. But having Mint on my phone to check every day so I can get a quick bird's eye view of everything that's happening across our various accounts, our retirement, all that kind of stuff. And we can get, yes, sometimes information that's a bit of a bummer, but honestly, it's so much better to know. And frankly, right now, having that knowledge and knowing that I always have my finger on the pulse of what's going on in our financial lives is incredibly important. Mint is a totally free app that will sync all of your accounts and your cards so that you can start to really see and understand all of your spending. It will categorize things for you. It will tell you when you've gone over budget or when you're in danger of going over budget in a certain category and help you just live a financially healthy life, which again, right now is more important to me than ever. Because when it comes to money, it is not about what it looks like. It's about what's really going on when you pop the hood. So pop the hood with Mint. You can check them out at the link in our description or our show notes. So who's another person who has been like completely unhinged in Quar?
Completely unhinged. Well, you saw the Vanessa Hudgens stuff as this began.
Oh my God, right? Which is like, I get it, but like,
it's like people are gonna die.
Like people are gonna die, and I respect that journey, but like I need to get my ass to Coachella. Like
it was entirely about Coachella. It was entirely about like, I don't want people to die, but like I bought all this turquoise jewelry. Like, and then she was like, "Oh, I probably shouldn't be saying this right now." And it was like, these people are away from their teams, and that is gonna never underestimate how controlled the messaging coming out of someone who has been famous since they were like 14 is, because there's no way that they're always saying normal statements. Like they're definitely, they need people there to filter out the like and provide them with the price of milk because like, right, they don't know it. And it's sort of funny because a lot of people I think thought reality stars were going to come unglued, but I'm like, no, those people are like trained to turn it on and off. And like, they also have no stakes because we've seen them all do disgusting, horrifying things on like national TV. So like nothing they could do could really upset people that much. It's the people who have like super perfect, polished, like I'm a beautiful actress things that have everything to lose. Like if you're Gal Gadot, don't sing Imagine.
Yeah, and she kicked that bad boy off. Like she was like front and center. The really polished hyper mega celebs, it's like you guys just got to go into hibernation.
Yeah, Tom Cruise better be in a Scientology bunker somewhere.
Meanwhile, the Bravo celebrities are actively losing their minds.
Yeah,
we're both Real Housewives fans for context, and like I don't know if you saw what Shannon Bador from OC was posting. Like, but I think
was it 5G anti-vax stuff?
No, it was like this is like God's purge, and we gotta let him die, basically.
Yeah,
that wasn't Shannon Bador. Sorry, Shannon. It was Kelly Dodd who was posting this stuff, and she got dragged to hell for it. But
Shannon, Kelly, Vicky, they've all had
they've also been hanging out and taking selfies together.
However, this will not impact their lives after because we didn't expect more from them.
No, but I will say, like, it is truly, I think, the reality star. Influencers are going insane in their own way because an influencer, even a really big influencer on Instagram, like, they're not a celebrity. Like, if they walk into a restaurant, people don't freak out. Like, most influencers, it's like, they're completely interchangeable. Most people, like, you can't even, like, if you follow a bunch of influencers, you don't know who's posting what. So, like
there's just yoga pants and hair.
Right, exactly. So they're always like, what's the next post? And that's that brand of unhinged in quarantine because, like, they're running on fumes. Like, those posts are getting unhinged levels of, like, forced quirkiness and forced joy and all that. The reality show people are like, they had such a tenuous level of celebrity to begin with, and it already had that note of, like, gotta keep this going as long as I can. And now that they're not allowed to, like, do their appearances or shill their products, like, they're losing it.
I will say the people I feel the worst for, like, not the worst, but obviously the people I feel the worst for are nurses and doctors and people who are sick, obviously. But if this category of human being that we're talking about, the people I feel really bad for are the Drag Race girls because they go into heavy debt to get on that show. None of them are wealthy going into it. Very rarely are they wealthy. And if they are, it's because of their parents. They go into heavy credit card debt to purchase the outfits and the wigs and stuff on the idea that when it's over, they'll get to tour and do live appearances. And within a year, even if they lose the show, they'll at least break even and then be famous. They're not going to get to do a reunion. The girls on Drag Race this season filmed with a sexual predator who they ended up having to try to cut out of the series. And they are constantly flashing this warning of, like, this person's been disqualified. We understand. So their whole season has been tainted. They can't do any live appearances going forward. They have to just kind of do, like, you know, I'm on YouTube Live, and, like, that's fun, but that's not the kind of, like, moneymaker for a drag queen.
Right, it's an events-driven business.
It's an events-driven, appearance-driven, meet-and-greet-driven business, and they probably heavily invested in clothes and hair and makeup for, and touring equipment for, right when the season started airing. And the season started airing right as quarantine broke. And they had no way to know going even before that, because even if they were reading the news in December about, like, coronavirus, none of us knew.
No.
But also, even if you were to say they should have known, they filmed this a year ago. So their whole life has been planned on the idea that this is going to air. And I know for a fact, some of them, like Heidi N. Closet, is a contestant who is America's sweetheart at the moment. She is Miss Congeniality. She is everything. She's just wonderful. She told a story on the show about how she was working at a gas station for minimum wage and was going into debt to do the show. And, like, what is going on for her right now? And, like, you know, fans don't have money to put together to donate to something like that. And, like, how do you apply for unemployment? Like, I was supposed to be a famous drag queen and now I'm not? Like, that sucks. And so, like, you know, I don't think it's a uniform experience. I think there's a whole spectrum of experiences here. But I do think that, like, certain mediums and media types and, like, ways of making money incentivize you to act and behave in a certain way. And to have that ripped from you is causing some of these Real Housewives to just, like,
oh my God.
Vicky Gunvalson is fully crying on Instagram Live being like, I need to get a haircut.
Also, like, she if she doesn't go to, like, Mastro's or the Palm for, or one of those, you know, steakhouses for a month, she dies. This is maybe a naive question, but as someone who worked and works still in many capacities in film and television production, are we just not going to have any new shows or movies forever? Like, what? How are they going to start producing film and television again?
So,
when am I getting Succession back?
Well, that I...
Who knows? Because the filming constraints on that.
I didn't even think about Succession. We might need to pause filming right now so I can just, like, weep. Here's what's going to happen. Every movie distributor is making the calculation of whether they should do VOD releases for their existing blockbuster stuff they had in the pipeline. Obviously, they should, but they have to figure out if it makes sense for them to break contracts that they had with movie theaters that were exclusivity contracts, like the amount of money they lose versus subscriptions versus operating costs. It's a huge calculation they end up having to make. And so a lot of, I think, what we're going to see is blockbusters way spaced out. We're going to be seeing, like, one big movie on VOD every, like, 45 days as opposed to every week. A lot of stuff that was way lower on the totem pole, like an independent movie that I was working on, I was going to play at a festival, and we were going to hope it would win an award, and then we would put it up on Vimeo, is now going to be, like, it is dropping on Netflix. It is a triple A, like, ad campaign for that stuff. And then what we're going to get when we come back is going to be soap operas and reality show stuff because they're real easy and cheap to throw together. You can work around for reality show stuff, as unfortunate as this is, you can work around union regulations. If you're like a Quibi, you don't have to obey by union rules. Quibi's a disaster. We can talk about that in a minute. But we can, that's a disaster. You can work around union rules and you can make up new ways to shoot. And then there's also the whole thing of Netflix is starting to, and I think they're going about it the wrong way at the moment, but they're starting to make deals with creators to shoot stuff in their home. Like someone who knows how to operate a camera, like a Brad Pitt knows how to operate a camera, is obviously very good at his job and can be provided with a script and you can cut together a short film like from that. There's also like the whole quarantine genre of stuff that every screenwriter right now is working on in their home with their Keurig. They're sitting being like, okay, so it's a murder that happens over Zoom or whatever. And like, we're gonna get a lot of that. And I think those will paper over the holes. So it won't feel like there's nothing coming out. It will just start getting weirder and more sporadic. Like, but a Netflix series that takes place entirely on a computer screen is going to drop the same week as a documentary series that's been shooting for 10 years.
But like, okay, Disney is like more powerful than most nations.
Yeah.
What? Are they not going to come up with some kind of solution where like everyone is getting a Rona test and they're all on set together?
Totally. You're gonna see
when
that.
When is Succession coming back?
The problem, though...
I'm sorry. I'm not that shallow. Please continue.
The problem, though, with that whole thing, and it breaks my heart because I want Succession, my sweet baby child, to come back to my arms, is...
How you shoot that, though.
People aren't gonna react well, even if they do it scientifically correctly. They're gonna have to do a PR campaign to explain how things were shot and how it's safe and how you shouldn't get mad at Disney and you shouldn't get mad at these celebrities. You should actually be really thankful that they worked so hard. Hollywood loves talking about itself and talking about how hard it works and how, you know, difficult and important storytelling is.
Well,
we tell stories is like the like tagline for every media company. They're gonna do that stuff, but it's a harder thing to land, because if they, you know, fly a bunch of the actors and crew onto an island and then self-quarantine for 2 weeks and then start shooting, I'm sure that's perfectly safe. I'm not a scientist to ask, yes, your doctor, but I'm sure there's a way to work out the logistics there. But then they're going to have to do a whole performative, like, and this is how we did it, kind of like thing that's going to be its own genre of like media that has to be produced in a safe way. A friend of mine is an editor for a large cable network, and she currently has to drive to a Dropbox, pick up, not like a physical Dropbox, not like a cloud Dropbox, pick up a hard drive, drive home, edit the stuff on her personal computer, put it back on the hard drive, drive back, drop it in the Dropbox. Then someone has to pick it up from there, drop it. And it's like this whole Rube Goldberg machine built to do this editing. So even stuff that they are able to produce, it takes so much longer to do the post-production. The Good Fight just went on hiatus, not because they didn't have the footage, but because how do you do audio production out of an audio studio? How do you do looping when someone only has an iPhone at home? How do you, you know, do pickup shots for things that don't make sense because the news changed? Like, The Good Fight takes place in our current news landscape, so they fill in little bits so it feels more current, even though they shot this
thing. I thought that show ended.
No, that was The Good Wife. This is the spinoff, The Good Fight.
Oh, okay.
It's basically The Good Wife, but, like, they shuffled the cast.
Should I watch The Good Wife? I'm looking for a show to binge.
Chelsea, you're going to love The Good Wife. It's so good. That is such a good wife. She is the best.
Our wife, she is so good.
Our wife, she is so good. The Good Wife is about...
Wait, is that with Chris Noth?
Yes.
Love me some Chris Noth.
It is about the person you wish Hillary Clinton had been her whole life.
Because I did not like House of Cards, I will say.
No, it's nothing like that.
Stuck with it through 2 seasons. But... all of a sudden they're faced with a situation where all of the money and fame and access and resources in the world can't buy them what they want, which is to walk into a restaurant and be lauded, or to, you know, do the projects you want to do, or to be treated the way you want to be treated. And I feel like now it's the same thing. Like, you have like Justin and Hailey Bieber on their compound, which, like, by the way, all these celebrity marriages, like fucking Shawn Mendes and Camilla. Yikes.
But look at Ben Affleck. Like, what is happening over there right now?
Divorce levels previously unheard of. But wait, so you have all these people now who are like locked in their like mega ranches, and they have space and pools and flowers to pick and horses to ride, but they all that money in the world and all that fame cannot buy them the ability to go to Coachella or to walk into a restaurant and be handed a menu or to be in a crowd at a concert. And I think that feeling of like, why can I not have everything I want is leading them to go insane.
I think a lot of people are realizing that they were miserable and now they're more miserable.
Like, oh shit, when I'm left alone with my significant other in my internal monologue, things get dark quick.
Yeah, but I think they're even more miserable because now they're like, well, at least before I didn't know I was miserable. You know what I mean? And they're like mad at us. Like we did this to them. And yeah. there is a level of their combativeness between the audience and the celebrity now where it's like,
celebs.
Hey guys, just so you know, hey guys, just to clarify, hey guys, we're going to be a little late on this. There is a kind of celebrity who right now is like angry if fans, you know, don't support X, Y, or Z, or angry if the tech thing isn't working, or angry if fans don't show up for a thing that they're doing. And it's like, we got a lot going on. It's not my top priority in life. Like, I'm so
like,
sorry.
Everyone just, like, let it ride a little bit. Anyway, I do think, though, that, like, the relationship, that parasocial relationship between not just the celebrity and the fan or the, you know, influencer and the follower, but all of us with one another, I think, I hope, will improve. Like, I do feel like you were saying earlier about people I think are starting to be, like, they're popping off a little less in my experience, even just in my anecdotal like family chats and like Facebook aunt posts and stuff like that. I feel like there's starting to be a little bit more of, listen, everyone's going through it. We don't need to be screaming at each other.
But you know, you have those really loud, ill-informed, but poorly incentivized like people who are obviously doing the worst thing in the world. People are being fired from Fox News for this kind of thing. That's how bad it is that Fox News is firing people. But I think for the most part, 99% of people have no trouble admitting they have no idea about disease pathology or like virology. And 99% of people are like, you know, maybe they're armed with a few facts, like masks are good, or like, you know, you need alcohol that has like a certain percentage of alcohol in it in order to disinfect, stuff like that. But for the most part, in my anecdotal experience, the friends and family that I had that were the most bullheaded about their bad ideas are at least saying, I mean, I don't really know. Like,
I know.
Even
what
when it
change.
Comes to economics, people are like, would that help? Is that what we should do? And you're like, let's ask economics, like, professors. And they're like, let's ask them. And I'm like, oh my God, like, you're going to get the right answer. Like, I'm like freaking out. And so, like, do I think the politics, the like, I'm on this team and you're on that team, the politics has gone away? No, I don't. But I do think that people are willing to say to politicians, like, that's bullshit. You just said bullshit. Like,
yeah.
How dare you?
And there's, like you said, a willingness to come to the middle. As a last note, I will say one thing that I was like wary of pre-core that it seems to have highly, highly ramped up and I hate as a cultural phenomenon. Curious as to your hot take. The like binge consuming alcohol is like a quirky personality thing. Like all the memes of the celebs like drinking out of a bottle of wine. Like all of the like talk about how like, you know, you're boozing it up every, like all of that stuff I found. A lot of the trends that were happening, I feel like, have kind of reversed a little bit in a good way. That one seems to have ramped up. And not only is it not, it's like the wine mom stuff where it's like joking about using alcohol as a coping mechanism or showing, you know, yourself drinking these obscene amounts. Even if it is a joke, it's still alluding toward the thing. But also, how difficult for people in sobriety with this. Like, and that is a trend. And I've seen the influencers doing it, the celebs doing it. Like, every other celeb is having their, like, quarantine boozy moment. Like, what's your take?
I think this is really hard for people in sobriety. I think, you know, there's only so much a Zoom AA meeting can offer you. There's only so much that like phone calls with people can replace therapy. And I know myself that I've been dealing with like, you know, getting weirdly drunk on a Friday night alone with like my husband. Like, that happened a couple times and it's like, you know, you didn't mean for it to happen, but you're like, oh, we bought this like weird ice maker and we wanted to try it out with liquor. And now we're like watching a TV show and then like, well, it's 3 a.m. and I felt like shit. And then I think, I was like, I don't want to do that anymore. And I think on a larger scale, yes, this is going to ramp up and it's going to be a problem. But I also think we're all going to learn a lesson, hard lesson, maybe the hard way of like, we can't use alcohol to solve problems, and we can't use alcohol to paper over things or glorify it or like, and I think, you know, a lot of people are going to have to learn better habits, but we have a lot of time to do that right now. We have a lot of time to sit home and think about how drinking too much makes us feel emotionally, not just physically, but like emotionally, how it affects our work, how it affects our relationships. And we have a lot of time to be like, is this how I want to live? And the way that I feel like I've changed my relationship to food, I'm hoping that some people will change in their relationship to alcohol or drugs, especially people that are breaking quarantine right now, to use. That's a really tough situation. And I can't tell someone the exact answer that like would be right for them. But I do know that like, cause and effect has never been more clear, because you're alone and everything that happens is kind of happens because of your choices. Like if you're in an apartment alone, you can't be like, well, then that person came in and did that. You have to sit with the like, I did that and it caused this and it sucks. And I don't want that anymore.
I think in general, like I feel the same way about people like really, really aggressively catastrophizing publicly, because that's just so scary for people to read. You know, just saying like, oh my God, like we'll never have a normal life again, or like we'll never get out of this, or we're all gonna die. Like stuff like that, I find, you know, I irresponsible for people to be doing on social media. And that seems to have ramped down. But I hope that people will start to get a little bit more conscious about like, sure, I'm not gonna pretend like I haven't, you know, consumed booze since quarantine. Of course I have, but I try really to never frame it as like a coping mechanism through it, or something that is my gift to myself. Do you know what I'm saying? And I think there has to be, I hope, a little bit. I think at first there was the shock and everyone was just figuring out how to get through each day. But I hope now, as this becomes like a more long-term thing, we come up with a better way to talk about how we're coping and handling things that aren't either spreading or encouraging or validating what is often dangerous behavior.
I think when this is over, my overall theory of all of this is that we're going to a place of extremes after this. Everybody has had to change and fast. And I think people are going to either go whole hog on huge consumption, living on a camp, like a compound in suburbia, and they're going to go on every trip they can. They're going to party as much as possible the minute that they're quote unquote allowed, and they're never going to stop, and then they're going to crash. But I think a lot more people are going to go in, or a significant amount of people are going to go in the direction of like, the way I was living before was not sustainable, and it wasn't fulfilling, and it wasn't safe, and I wasn't happy. And with this pause, I was able to like contemplate what I want to be doing with my life, what I can actually contribute, what makes me feel fulfilled, and what makes me feel productive isn't the things that I thought did. And that things like counts on Twitter, like, I mean, social media behavior is so odd. You see people post things and then they don't get enough likes, so they delete them. I think we're starting to realize that, like, who cares?
Who cares?
Truly, who cares? Just post what you like. And if other people like it, in fact, it's better to turn off the people who don't like it, because now you're just selecting a group of people who like the same things as you. I've gotten so unhinged with Twitter, just tweeting opinions and things that I sincerely believe. And if they're polarizing to some people, if some people don't want to hear about like my take on the economy, but I feel in earnest about it, like I have researched it and I feel like I have a strong opinion about like what's best for people. If people get turned off, I used to take that personally and be like, oh, I worded it incorrectly. I didn't teach them correctly. Or like, oh, you know, I don't want people to dislike me or have bad ideas about my intention. And now I'm just like, man, go find what makes you happy. Yeah. Unfollow me, unfollow you. It's fine. It doesn't matter. It's not, this isn't a rejection of you as a person because your Instagram post didn't get enough likes. It's like a confluence of events, of time you posted and whether or not it's relatable and if it's the right color scheme, and who cares about any of that? Like, you have to just do the things that make you happy. And the things that make me happy, even on social media, even interacting with people, have changed. And also the things that make me happy aren't necessarily coming from those avenues when they really were before. Like, before I really enjoyed when I would go on a trip creating like an Instagram story so that people could feel like they were going on the trip with me, and I could get feedback on like, oh, you're in Paris, you should go to this place. And I'd be like, hell yeah, I'm going to go to that place. Thanks for like dropping by and watching my story. That felt good. That felt like encouragement. And now I'm realizing that like it wasn't really real, and those aren't real relationships. And then that doesn't mean as much as like having a 2-hour conversation with my aunt who I haven't caught up with since I was a teenager, and to sit and be like, what do you think about all this? And like, what have you been talking about? And like, oh, what's your favorite memory of like when we were young, and like stuff like that, like I feel like I wouldn't trade it for anything now. And I wouldn't trade the letter writing with my grandma for anything. I wouldn't trade the really beautiful conversations I've had with my husband for anything. And so, yeah, this is, of course, not something I'm glad happened. But if we can pull those silver linings out and carry that with us, maybe we'll all be better for this. We'll be better people. Some people are going to be way worse, and that's always the case. But there maybe enough of us will be better that we can make a world after this that doesn't have to be as unfulfilling and as exhausting as the one that we were in.
Exhausting is totally the word. And I feel like, as I said at the beginning, my focus has become laser centered on, is today going to be a good day? How can I make today a good day? And I'll enjoy it while I have it, and I'll deal with tomorrow as it comes. And I think living less in the projection and more in the moment is hopefully going to be a big takeaway, and hopefully will inspire at least some of the people who are thought leaders and influencers and stuff like that to just like drop the act and just be a human being.
We made it so easy to run away from feelings and from problems and from things we didn't like, and to cover them up and to digitally fix like our flaws. And we made it really easy to run, and now there's nowhere to go. So like, you better run, learn, babe, to be happy, babe.
Can't run in a mask. Well, thank you so much for being here, Ryan. It is such a pleasure to see another person
this
that I care
euphoric
about.
Like, even looking at you from across the room has been euphoric.
Oh my God. And now we're going to go eat the salads that we got. So anyway, before I leave, I wanted to talk to you guys really quickly about another of Intuit's amazing products that has been endlessly helpful in all of what we've been going through here as a small business. TFD is luckier than most in that we've been able to continue operating. We've had our clients, our life has been, compared to many small businesses, pretty good. But we still applied for and ended up getting the Paycheck Protection Program loan, which we are extremely grateful and happy for. And that did require providing a lot of documentation about the business. And we would never have had even a fraction of the easy time that we had assembling all the documents that we needed in order to apply for the loan if we didn't use QuickBooks. We've been using QuickBooks regularly for years now. It is, in my opinion, the best business accounting software for small businesses out there. And do remember that if you're a freelancer or self-employed, you are a small business of one. But they made all of the various expenses, the invoices, the payroll, everything super cleanly categorized. It's easy to pull any numbers or reports that you want. And that came in so, so handy when it was time to apply for that program. So I highly recommend, if you are someone who has a small business or you're freelancing and you want to have better control over and knowledge of your business's finances than ever, which is essential, to check out QuickBooks. I could not recommend it more. We love it and use it every single day here at TFD, and it was indispensable for us in this time. And as always, thank you so, so much for tuning into the Financial Confessions. I will see you back here next Monday, and stay safe out there.